Now, today, we're going to talk about a day that should be, as a Christian, and I don't really like that term Christian. If you hang out around here long enough, you'll find out we use the term Christ follower. Christian has become so watered down. I mean, people are Christians just because their mom and dad are. And I'm like, really? So your mom and dad are married. That automatically makes you married, right? Well, I was born in the United States. That makes me a Christian. No, it doesn't. It makes you a U.S. citizen. Right? It has nothing to do with your spirituality. I don't know if you know this, but Christianity is not a Western religion. Christianity is a Middle East religion. It came out of Jerusalem. It came out of the Middle East. It is not a Western religion. It is not something that we concocted with the pilgrims a long time ago, all right, or stemmed out of Europe. And so we use the term Christ follower a lot around here, people that are really following Christ and doing what Jesus wants them to do. So if you're here this morning, and like I said, if you're here this morning and you don't believe in Jesus, you're an atheist, maybe you're an agnostic, maybe you're not sure this whole Jesus thing is for you, then what you're going to hear this morning is kind of a behind the scenes, what really Christianity is looking forward to, what Christianity is about. Now, if you're a follower of Jesus and you believe in Jesus and you have a relationship with Jesus, how many times can I say Jesus in 1 minute, right? Then if you have that relationship, this is what you're looking forward to. This is what it's all about. And it is what I've titled a glorious day. The day that Jesus returns. What's going to happen? What goes on when Jesus shows up? Later in the sermon, I'm going to give you 21 things that will happen when Jesus shows back up. You say, well, Tyson, how do we know that Jesus is even going to show up? How do we even know that the Bible is real? Listen, we've got thousands and thousands of years with hundreds and hundreds of prophecies, and the Bible hasn't missed one yet. And so if it says that something's going to happen, by golly, it's going to happen. And so Jesus' return is going to happen. But what are we supposed to be doing? I want to cover two things before I get to those other 21 things. All right, and I put them in your notes. You got them. You don't have to like hurry and scribble them down. Those 21 things, we'll get to them in a little bit. The first thing that we need to do, we need to focus on, we need to be busy till he comes. We need to be doing our job until he comes. Okay? We are not going to be the type of people that go, oh, quick, the boss is coming, hurry. Right? Click, get the minimize Facebook, pull up your email, look like you're busy. Right? I know that does not go on in anybody's office ever. Right? You're sitting in your cube, and everybody's like, I mean, you're sitting in your cube, it looks like whack-a-mole. Everybody's popping up. I don't know, that was just my version of the office when I was in the office. Turned to Keith, who sat behind me. I'm like, do you ever think that, like, if there was ever a big, like, Jolly Green Giant, it would look like whack-a-mole in here? Whatever. All right. Do business until he comes. That's the first thing. We need to be busy doing his work until he comes. And we're going to look at a parable in Luke chapter 19, 11 through 27. Luke 19, 11 through 27. But before we get into this parable, or the story of Jesus, I want to give you a few clues that might help make it a little bit clearer. First, the man in this story is Jesus. The man is Jesus. The subjects, or in some translations it says citizens, those are unbelievers. Those are people who do not believe in Jesus. Okay? And then the servants are the believers, those that have a relationship with Jesus and follow Jesus. So hopefully understanding those three things will make this a little bit clearer. But let's read this. Luke chapter 19, 11 through 27 says, while they were listening to this, he went on to tell them a parable because he was near Jerusalem and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. He said, a man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. So he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas. Put this money to work, he said, until I come back. Now, I want to stop right there. A minus is a 2.5, 2.5 years worth of wages. So take whatever it is you earn in a year and multiply that by 2.5. So this business guy is saying, I'm giving you 2.5 years worth of salary up front. I need you to make money for me. Okay? I need you to make money for me. So, in verse 14, let's pick it back up. But his subjects hated him and sent a delegation after him to say, we don't want this man to be our king. He was made king, however, and returned home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he had given the money in order to find out what they had gained with it. The first one came and said, sir, your mina has earned 10 more. Well done, good and faithful servant, my good servant. His master replied, because you have been trustworthy in a very small matter, take charge of 10 cities. The second came and said, sir, your mina has earned 5 more. His master answered, you take charge of 5 cities. Then the other servant came and said, sir, here is your mina. I have kept it laid away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you because you're a hard man. You take out what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow. His master replied, I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. You knew, did you, that I am a hard man, taking out what I did not put in and reaping what I did not sow? Why then didn't you put my money on deposit so that when I came back, I would have collected it with interest? Then he said to those standing by, take his mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. Sir, they said, he already has 10. He replied, I tell you that to everyone who has more will be given, but as for the one who has nothing, even what he has will be taken away. But those enemies of mine who do not want me to be king over them, bring them here and kill them in front of me. This goes right along with what we talked about last week, that when you get to heaven, there are rewards, remember? And this parable of Jesus only spells that out even more. If you weren't here last week, didn't hear last week's sermon, you can go to our website and listen to it, or you can go to iTunes in the search engine and iTunes and type in the River LaPelle and it'll pull it up. You can listen to the podcast on iTunes. Jesus told this parable because, people, we have a job to do. If you are a follower of Christ, you have a job. You have a responsibility. God has given all of us talents and abilities that we are supposed to be using for Jesus. And Jesus made it very clear. He's like, one day I'm going to come back, and I want to see what you did with the talent I gave you. Because based on what you did with the talent is based on how your rewards are in heaven. If you want some bling, if you want your mansion in heaven to look like MTV Cribs, you got to get busy. I'm serious. I mean, if you want your ride pimped in heaven, you got to get busy. Okay? That's just the way it is. You can't just come and hang out and accept Jesus and then go, okay, well, I'm in. It's all good. No, it's not all good. There's stuff to do. You have things to do. We're supposed to be busy until he comes. What are we supposed to be doing? Well, Matthew chapter 28, 16 through 20. Matthew 28, 16 through 20. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. Jesus says, listen, you got to be busy. You got to be busy telling people about me. You got to be busy baptizing people. And you got to be busy making disciples. Now, the word disciples is like what? So, like, I'm supposed to have a posse of 12 or what? No, that's not disciple. Discipling is mentoring. Mentoring somebody else with what you're learning. One of the things that I tell people when I meet with them one-on-one or when I do counseling or if I'm just, I say, listen, my only requirement for helping you is that you go tell somebody else what you're learning. You go put it into somebody else because this thing will change your life. To the extent that you dive into this and live it, it will alter your life. Number two, we cannot afford to get sidetracked. We cannot afford to get sidetracked. Let's read another passage. We're jumping all around. So if you brought your Bible and you get a paper cut, I'm sorry. But Matthew chapter 24, 3 through 14, this is Jesus. And Jesus is talking about the end of the world. Jesus is kind of heading up like, what's coming? What's coming down the pipe? I mean, don't you guys like to know what's coming? I do. I have a calendar. I have this thing called a calendar. And my wife and I, honey, if it ain't on the calendar, it ain't happening. She goes, but we were scheduled. We were going to go do this. Not on the calendar, honey. And then the heated discussion ensues. But because we want to know what's coming. We want to know what's down the pipe, don't we? So Jesus shares with us a little bit of what's coming down the pipe. Matthew 24, 3 through 14. It says this. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, what will happen and what will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age? And Jesus answered, watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars, rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places, and all these things are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. You will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. This isn't in my notes. This is aside. This is like the ice cream truck coming around. Oh, I didn't know the ice cream truck was coming around. Okay, get ice cream. Here's your ice cream truck. It says here that the love of many will what? Will grow cold. People don't just start hating Jesus overnight. It grows. You know how you boil a frog? You put it in a pot. You guys don't know how to boil a frog? Okay, I'm going to tell you how to boil a frog. If you put a frog in hot water, he'll jump right out. But if you put him in regular room temperature water and slowly turn up the heat, he will die and never know it. And Jesus says, don't let this world cook you like a frog. Don't let your love for me grow cold and you eventually die. It must have been really funny. All right, I'm going to move on. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. Okay. We have Sandy, right? Is that the hurricane on the East Coast, Sandy? Right? And then I saw this morning that there's like these waves coming towards Hawaii, right? And there's all these things happening. And everybody points, like when you say, oh, look, the F5, Jesus must be coming because there's an F5 tornado. What in the world? I mean, don't we do that though? Like things happen in nature and we're like, oh, it's the end. It's coming. It's the end. Okay, look, I got news for you. Jesus said, what we just read, Jesus said, that's the beginning. That's not the end. That's the beginning of birth pains. Now, I've been in the labor room when my wife was having our kids. And as much as it hurts, be careful what I say here. As much as it hurts, that first birth pain when it hits, and she sits up and goes, whoa! Right? And every man goes, oh, snap, get out of the room now. Right? I don't know. That was just like the Hulk times 10. Right? That's good news. You know why that's good news? The baby's coming. The deliverance is coming. That's good news when that happens. It hurts, but it's good news. So Jesus says all of the strange stuff in nature that's starting to happen, he's like, okay, you're in labor, it's coming. But that's not the end, that's the beginning of the end. What did he say? When did he say the end was coming? When did he say the end was coming? Verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and what? And then the end comes. When does the end of the world come? When this gospel of Jesus has been preached to every, and the word nation here is the Greek word ethnos. It's where we get our English word ethnic group. When the gospel has been preached to every ethnic group in the world. Now, I don't know how they know this. But they've done studies, and they've found out that currently, right now, there are 2,800 ethnic groups that have not heard the gospel. 2,800 left. That's it. 10 years ago, there was near almost 10,000. Jesus says the end will come when every ethnic group in the world has heard the gospel. There's only 2,800 left. Anybody else want to get busy? Quit sitting on our duff? I don't want to be caught with my pants down when Jesus comes. As you didn't need to, that was just bad, wasn't it? But listen, I'm serious. Does anybody else want to be standing there looking like a doofus, like, duh? I don't know. I was busy playing Call of Duty. I didn't think you were really coming back. I mean, you've taken 2,000 years to get here, right? I really hope on my Call of Duty night, Jesus does not show up on my Call of Duty night. I will look so doofy.
Tyson?
Yeah?
What are you doing?
Killing people? Right? I mean, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. I mean, people have argued. We spend so much time trying to identify who the Antichrist is. You ready for this? I'm going to go through history from the 1900s. People have said Mussolini was the Antichrist. People have said Hitler was the Antichrist. People have said Mikhail Gorbachev in the 80s was the Antichrist. There are people now saying that our current president is the Antichrist. Listen, Jesus said, that's not your concern. Your concern is to be spreading the gospel, winning other people to Christ, and telling them about me. Matthew 24:36 says this, no one knows about the day or the hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Jesus says, listen, nobody knows. It's kind of like the baby on the eBay commercial. Nobody knows, right? Nobody knows when Jesus is coming back. I think sometimes if we guess it and go, oh, it's got to be this, you know, the 88 reasons why Jesus is coming back in 88, or Jesus is coming back on March, whatever, I think God would be like, nope, sorry, cross that one off. I'm not coming back on that date. He says, nobody knows. Nobody knows. We waste more time talking and arguing over theological stuff than we do being about the business of our boss or our big brother. So 21 things that will happen when Christ returns. Are you ready? 21 things. We're going to go through this pretty quick. And then we'll be close to the end of the end, about the end. All right. 21 things that will happen when Christ returns. I got these. They're in your notes. You can look them up throughout the week. We're not going to take the time to look them up now. Number one, Jesus himself will come again. Number two, Jesus himself will receive us. You will get one-on-one time with your big brother. Okay? Number three, we will meet him in the air. Four, he will minister to those that remain. Now, the word minister means basically to heal up, to help, to mend the scars, the brokenness, etc. Because when Jesus comes back, not everybody's going to be like all hunky-dory, peachy-keen. I mean, there's still a hurt world. Number five, he's going to return to earth. More specifically, number six, he will return to the Mount of Olives outside of Jerusalem. Number seven, he will return in flames of fire. Number eight, he'll come in power and glory. Number nine, he will stand on the earth. Number 10, this is a throwdown that I'm waiting. UFC has nothing on this throwdown. Trust me. Number 10, he will destroy the Antichrist. And we will get to watch. Yeah, whoopah. All right. Number 11, he will sit on the throne of his glory. Number 12, he will be given the throne of David. I want to stop right there with 11 and 12. The throne of his glory is a spiritual throne. It is heaven. It is a spiritual throne. The throne of David is a physical, earthly throne. And what Jesus is going to do is basically declare himself king over the spiritual realm and over the physical realm and combine the two thrones and go, I'm in charge of the spiritual world and I'm in charge of the physical world. So sit up and pay attention. Okay? That's basically what it means. That's what that means by combining those two thrones. Let's go on. 13, he will be given nations. He will gather all the nations and judge them. We talked some about the judgment last week. Number 15, he will reign on the earth. Number 16, he'll be given the kingdoms of the world. Number 17, he'll be given dominion. That is supreme power. His word will be it. You will not get to say, but why? I tell you what, yesterday, if one of those kids would have asked me why one more time, I did, man. We were sitting at Monocle's in Noblesville, and I'm like, you want to go to the bathroom? And like everybody knows, like if daddy says, let's go to the bathroom, it's not good. If they have to go to the bathroom, it's okay. I mean, I get that. But I'm like, if you ask why one more time, you're going to the bathroom. Parents, you know what I'm talking about. Some of the younger ones of us in here are like, oh my gosh, What was he going to do? I was going to give him a swirly. I was going to give my oldest son a swirly. All right. Number 18, everyone in the grave will hear his voice. Number 19, every eye will see him. Number 20, every knee will bow. Whether voluntarily or involuntary, everybody will bow. Okay? You can either choose to do that voluntary now by accepting him and having that relationship, or you'll be, you know, forced to. All right, number 21, we can quicken his coming. We can quicken his coming. Now, that's probably a new one for most of you in here that are Christ followers, and we're going to wrap up with this. We can hasten his coming. 2 Peter 3:12. I just want to break this verse down. Listen to this. Listen to what Peter wrote. As you look forward to the day of God. Now, who's you? Well, he's writing to Christ followers. He's writing to people that have a relationship with Jesus. He says, as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming, that day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire and the elements will melt in heat. The word speed is the Greek word spuedo. It's spelled S-P-E-U-D-O. It is where we get the English word speed. It is not speedo. We do not pronounce this Greek word speedo. It is, I'm sure somewhere in here I can find that it is against the law of God to wear a speedo on the beach if you're a man and over 70. I'm just saying. Okay? It's not speedo, it's spuedo in the Greek. And it means, and listen to the definition of this, it means to cause something to happen soon. It means to hurry something up. Peter says, you, as you look forward to his coming, you have the ability to speed up his coming. Wow. Holy cow. We have a big responsibility as Christ followers. He'll show up a lot sooner the harder we work. Ha ha. Buddy, I'm busting my tail now. I want this world to be put right. Isn't that cool? I mean, think about that. God said, you have the ability to bring me to the earth quicker if you will start spreading the gospel and sharing and making disciples. So let's, okay, something we haven't done in a while. Let's Tysonize this. So Tysonizing, if you're new and you're not used to that, basically what that means is we take the word out and we put the definition of the word in and we read the verse with the definition in it. So here we go. As you, now as it says as you, insert your name, right? So Vicky and Casey and Jesse and Jen, as you, Jen, look forward to the day of God and are working to speed up his coming. Wow. Snap. You're responsible for hurrying it up. You know, as Christ followers, this should be like one of the things that we're looking for. This will be greater than the day you got married. Husbands are like, that doesn't take a whole lot. And wives are like, don't you dare act like you even agreed with that. Right? I mean, think of, you ready for this? This is what I thought of when I was preparing my notes. When you think of hurrying up Christ coming, think of the chipmunk song. The Christmas chipmunk song, right? Christmas, Christmas, time is near. Time for toys and time for cheer. We've been good, but we can't last. Hurry, Christmas, hurry fast. Right? That should be us. Hurry, hurry, Jesus, hurry. We're trying to be good, but we can't last. Jesus, please hurry up fast. That should be our prayer. That should be our cry. You guys will never listen to that song the same way again. Your kids will be in the back of the car singing one thing, and you'll be like, hurry up, Jesus, hurry fast. Right? Hurry, hurry, hurry. I mean, it's like Monster Truck Sunday. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get here. It's like Monster Jam. They want you there, right? Jesus wants you there. Jesus wants you there. My question for you today, all joking aside, is this. What are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to? Are you looking forward to seeing your big brother Jesus come back and set the earth straight? Or are you just going through life trying to mend your own problems and fix your own stuff? What is it you want? What is it you want out of life? What's your goal in life? Do you want to get to your dying breath only to realize that you've not done anything with your life? You know, there's an old hymn titled, "It Is Well With My Soul." And there's a verse in there that says, "And Lord, haste the day when my faith shall be sight, and the clouds be rolled back as a scroll. The trump shall resound, and the Lord shall descend. Even so, it's well with my soul." Can you say that today? Let's stand up. Can you say that today? Can you say right now, if Jesus shows up, can you say it's well with my soul? And I'm ready to confidently look my big brother in the eye and go, "I try to do everything you've asked me to do." Could you do that? Or would you be like what we talked about last week, those who will stand ashamed, be like, "I didn't do anything with my life"? What are you going to be? Are you going to be the one he looks at and says, "You know what? Well done, good and faithful servant. You had 10, now you get 20. You had 5, now take 10. What do you want your life to be? What do you want to accomplish with your life? So I ask you this morning, is it well with your soul? Do you know whether or not you'll be able to confidently stand face to face and look Jesus in the eye confidently and go, "You know what? Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Here's what I've done for you." Is that what you want? It's what I want. Let's bow our heads and pray.